You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 31st, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, folks, it's Casual Friday. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter will be with us to talk about the week that was and the week that will be. Also on the program today, my old friend, or perhaps he would prefer me to say my friend from a way back, David Bender, former host of Ring of Fire, and politically direct on Air America Radio, now making a documentary that he's been actually been working on for quite some time, titled Playing Gay, about the history of LGBT portrayals on television. Also on the program today, dawn breaks over Marblehead. Is the establishment media starting to understand what all of you, maybe not all of you, but certainly longtime listeners of this program have known for literally nearly a decade. Literally a decade. What's 2015? Yeah, a decade. That the tail has been wagging the dog for some time on the right. Conservative media trumps, pun intended, the Republican Party. Also on the program today, highway bill will get signed today, but it only lasts for 3 months. So we should have some real fun in the fall. Clinton rules rule. The New York Times embarrassing fiasco over her emails. I can't even understand it. I don't even think anybody pays attention to these stories anymore. The only thing that what's really becoming the story is the demise of the New York Times. Like, it's becoming so naked. And I say this as someone who is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a fan of Hillary Clinton's. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders, I know that Matt and Mike probably touched upon this yesterday, massive house party attendance across the country, not last night, the night before. 100,000 people. And pretty stunning turnout in July. A year and a half, well, not quite a half, well, before the election. And we've mentioned it on this program many times. If you want to look for a sleeper in the Republican Party race, keep an eye out on John Kasich. His fundraising totals just came out today. And lastly, I want to be very careful because apparently he's litigious. But James Woods, and of course this is subjectively speaking, this is an opinion that could never be proven or disproven, is a huge, whiny-ass TD baby. Uh-oh. Apparently, he's suing somebody on Twitter for saying that he was a cokehead or something like that. And I would never make such an accusation because that's either provable or unprovable. Although I can say that I have had conversations with someone who knew him way back when, before his nose job. Now, maybe he could sue me if he didn't get a nose job, but that's, I'm just reporting a conversation that I had with someone who knew him back in the day. I had this conversation with a guy like 15 years ago who said he was a real a-hole. So, but he's also, you know, he's a big right winger now, yes. James Woods. He's a big truther. I wonder if he's supporting Donald Trump. We have, of course, new polling that show that Donald Trump, surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
They're still killing it. But this, well, we'll talk to Cliff about this. Folks, I want to remind you that this program relies on its members for its funding. We should tell you that our YouTube stream is down. I guess if you're listening to this and you usually watch YouTube, you know that. But, and if you usually watch YouTube and you're trying to watch us on YouTube and you're still trying to figure it out and you're not listening to the sound of my voice, my telling you is not going to help you. So forget about it. But this program is funded nearly 98% by its members. And what the members do is they make it possible to put out a free show every day. And then as a thank you to them, we say, here's another 50, 60, 120 minutes on a daily basis. You can pick and choose what you listen to on the program. You support this program. But today, this show is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Now, I've talked about ZipRecruiter a couple of days ago. It is basically what I call it around the office is the sword of Damocles, which is hanging over Michael. Now, I know, Michael, you don't like this. Come on. You don't appreciate it. But the point is that one of the toughest things about letting an employee go is the prospect of having to hire another one. And ZipRecruiter makes it so much easier. It's been used by over 400,000 businesses. Once you post a job listing, it's instantly matched to candidates from over 4 million resumes. It posts up to 100-plus job sites with one single click. And if you've ever looked for an employee, if you've ever looked to hire, you know putting it on one site doesn't quite cut it. Putting it on two sites doesn't cut it. Check out what Stephanie Swap, I'm not sure who she is, but this is just one of the testimonials. ZipRecruiter is affordable and so easy to use. I can write, edit, and change out my job openings very easily. When I've had questions, their customer service team has been outstanding, patient, and knowledgeable. I've done a ton of hiring already via ZipRecruiter and intend to continue to do so. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time, try ZipRecruiter for free. Simply go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, it is Casual Friday, but there's nothing casual about this little ditty.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Cliff Schachter from Libertas LLC. Hello, Cliff.
Sammy, how are you?
I'm doing great. A lot of things to talk about this week, and things that we haven't really touched on. I mean, you and I have not talked about Trump, and I don't want to overload this because, but I do want to. One thing struck me this week. There was a piece that got released, I don't know, a couple of days ago. From the Shorenstein Foundation by Jackie Combs. Jackie Combs, I know you know this, is a national correspondent for The New York Times. She has been with The New York Times for, I don't know, 8 years. She's been from like in the 90s, she was, I think, with The Wall Street Journal covering Washington politics. She's been doing this for, I don't know, at least 25 years in terms of national politics. And she wrote a really impressive, I mean, it's like a book almost, report in the for the Shorenstein Foundation, basically about how the conservative media has taken over the Republican Party and they cannot govern anymore because of it. And there's so much... I have so many different reactions to this, but it is, to me, it's encouraging at least that people like her, who's a good reporter, but are starting to become aware of what's been going on. And at the same time, it's shocking that they haven't been.
Yeah, all that is all true. And I mean, essentially what she lays out here in what is a really well-researched and well-written piece, not surprising, is a lot of the kinds of things that you and I have been talking about on this show for a long time, and everything else, you know, we've discussed about potentially talking about today, this ties into all that. I mean, how you kind of started talking about Donald Trump, he's the best example of all. I mean, you know, look, what you used to have is, you know, and I'm not saying establishments are always good things. As you know, you and I have our problems with establishments quite often. But you had an establishment in the Republican Party that was a moderating force. That would you know, they would consciously, if you went beyond a certain point, you were rejected, right? I mean, there was a period of time when McCarthy got away with his whole, you know, dog and pony act because other people in the party were scared of him. And then a half dozen or so moderate Republicans, including Margaret Chase Smith of Maine is a great example, and others stood up and supported censuring him. People from his own party and said this is unacceptable. Sort of the moderate Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower. You know, when the Birchers came on the scene, largely 50s, 60s, whatever, you know, and it's not to say, again, that some of these other conservatives were terrific figures, but, you know, famously Buckley said, you know, kind of pushed them away and said we won't embrace this sort of – I mean, if you look at what the Birchers are saying then and what the Tea Party says today, it's almost indistinguishable. Right. I mean, there's a traitor around every corner. Everything is a conspiracy. You know, no government should exist and that kind of stuff. But what you didn't have, what you had back then is, you know, it's not to say there wasn't media, but it was mostly controlled by establishment like figures because there are a couple network stations that everybody watched. And you didn't have the sort of diffuse media you have today, which presents a lot of opportunities. But also, it's a well-funded system that their entire base listens to. It's, you know, I've often put the blame on Fox, but obviously, and Limbaugh, but I think the point, she makes another point there, which is there are local copies of these guys everywhere. And that's hugely important. There was a point in 2004 where I was a political analyst for the Sinclair broadcast system, which some people may be familiar with, others may not. And there's a huge controversy. It was always me taking on a whole number of right-wingers. I don't know if you remember Armstrong Williams. That
I do.
Interesting individual. Well, I could tell stories about him the whole show, but we'll leave that aside for now. And, you know, they would have editorials on, and they own local news stations, and they definitely own some in Ohio and many swing states. And they would put on stuff that was just pure propaganda, you know, about the Iraq War. They helped push the Swift boat stuff. So that's a local example. Here we've got a talk radio guy in Cincinnati, Bill Cunningham, who's just a complete imbecile.
Yep.
He's been nationally syndicated now, on, I think, on Sunday nights or something, but he's on every day here. And, I mean, you know, and so this stuff is pumped into local markets by local figures, too. And the biggest problems are, first of all, the party has lost control. They don't control, you know, you had Citizens United and that. They don't control the money anymore.
Yes.
They don't control opinion anymore. Then the second part of that equation is the era of sort of objective media, where our media, everybody feels like they cannot call out what is quite obviously a problem. There are certain issues that have been decided, right? Slavery and segregation, all sorts of racism that are overt, bad. So they'll take a side on that, right? They won't have two sides debating, you know, whether slavery was a good idea or not.
Right.
But they'll have two sides debating whether global warming's actually happening and whether more guns means less crime and whether banning abortion is a good thing for women for that it will protect their health and whether cutting health care from people is good for the long term, they'll work harder or whatever stupid theory they have, whether supply-side economics works, and I could go on and on. These are all things that have been proven to be failures. They've got a couple paid-off people on their side who come out with this crap all the time who are not real. If they ever were social scientists, they no longer are. And then there's the preponderance of evidence by people actually doing real research on the other side, the 98 or 99% of people that say whatever their position is wrong. And the evidence we have in front of us about, you know, for example, supply side economics and what that's wrought. And yet they will get either an equal hearing or a better hearing because the press, you know, as I think Paul Krugman once said, we'll debate, you know, whether chocolate is really chocolate or chocolate's vanilla, you know, and that's really a huge problem. So her doing this, in this article is very important, but really we need more at the New York Times, at the Washington Post, and many other publications. When somebody says something that's just, you know, literally stupid and factually untrue, it has to be called that. There's no balance. There's no, you can be objective. You don't have to take one side or the other. And so when people on the left say something that's factually untrue or whatever, point that out too. I know which side will be pointed out a lot more. You know, you're doing your job, then you're still being objective. I mean, objectively, certain things are true and certain things aren't true. There's not opinions on everything. And so I think those two things have come together and created this feedback loop where Republican primaries are decided by the furthest right, most, you know, influenced by Fox News and Koch brothers and, you know, that kind of thing. And so if you're not willing to say the crazy thing that comes to your mind, somebody will move to the right of you will say that, and the media won't call them out on it, or at least maybe will in editorials, but won't in their news sections that people actually read. And so you get a phenomenon like Donald Trump, the perfect example of what the logical, you know, conclusion is of this kind of a thing, where he's leading in the polls because he's willing to say things that are even crazier than other people that I don't think he has thought about twice or once or believes, or doesn't really matter. He knows what people want to hear. He's willing to say it. And he has some fame and some money, and that's created a situation where he's now more than doubling anybody else in Republican primary polls. And that's because of all this stuff that we're talking about right here.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. There's a lot to cover in what you just said, but working sort of backwards, I actually think the amazing thing is that we have – there's a quality to this, you know, sort of story that Jackie Combs is reporting on that is like, you know, it's a little bit old, like you say. But the fascinating thing is that for a while, and I would put this back, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when you were working for the Sinclair Broadcasting, where there was only one game in town. And part of that was because the web hadn't quite developed to where it is now, even as late as 2004, maybe, you know, 2003. And there was only one game in town. And so you now have a situation where Trump, he's in two different universes, right? Like he's in, and this is sort of gets back to my sort of Michelle Bachmann Tea Party theory with the two cameras. You know, you can't look sane to both the Tea Party and or you want to call them the Republican base, either way, it doesn't matter. And the rest of the world at the same time. And so Trump, we have this phenomenon where Trump, like you say, is double digits on his nearest opponent in the Republican Party. And yet he is doing the poorest in national polls relative to any potential Democrat. And but I want to here's one thing that really struck me about Jackie Combs did a podcast for the Shorenstein Foundation talking about it, where she said before she started this project, she wasn't aware of right wing media beyond Limbaugh and the National Review. And she said she was surprised at the size and the radicalism of the right wing media activist network. Now, that to me is mind blowing, because you are out there reporting on national politics, and to not be aware. And I would wager a guess that she is aware of every major left wing outlet, just tangentially. I don't know if she reads in these times, but I don't think she'd be surprised to hear that it exists.
Right.
And part of that is because on the left, it is smaller, but significantly smaller. I mean, I don't even know if people
understand. The left seeks the publications and these things, and the left seek mainstream credentials.
Yes.
In other words, they still care about truth and facts. I've written for most of the public. I mean, I've written for not a long time, but I wrote for In These Times at least once or twice. And you still have to, when you hand in something to editors, it can't be just made up.
Well,
it
and
has
also
to actually be true. Go ahead.
I think what you're actually touching upon is, forget about ideology for a moment. When you look at the left publications, the primary, the bigger ones, and by left I mean left of center, their business model is such that they can't be sequestered in their own world. When you look at I don't even know if people listening to the show realize there are at least two or three or four or five like other right-wing networks aside from Fox now. There's the World Net Daily that has it's like a TV network. I think Heritage has one. I mean, there's multiple of these. That I don't even, the CBN, the American Family Association, they all have these sort of mini cable networks. I think partly are on radio, partly are on the web.
And then, I don't mean to interrupt, but radio, large, so it's not just sort of the, corporate radio, like Christian radio, like
yes.
Salem Communications, like large scale. There's just nothing like that on the left.
Nothing.
Large scale, syndicators that whose sole devotion is to putting a far minority, very right wing Christian point of view all over the place.
And to not be aware of all of these outlets, which necessarily means you're not listening to them, is to really have no sense of what is driving. Let's say you just pay attention to these bigger outlets and you beyond Limbaugh and National Review is your only perception of what is right-wing media. You have no idea what is driving the motivations or the plans of these Republican leaders.
Again, it's important to point out, we've discussed this before, that Mike Huckabee was selling some biblical cure to cancer through his email list. Dick Morris has been busted for selling his email list to his own organizations and then pumping out on Newsmax, or the emails he gets from them, ideas about things like that or certain prayers causing this, certain elixirs helping that. In other words, Rick Perlstein wrote a great piece on this. The low information, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it, low intelligence base on the right, which is not a very educated or very smart group of people, it's older white guys, and quite frankly, that's the same target market for people that want to send you Nigerian bank scams. So it's no surprise then that a lot of people get into this on the right also for money. because there's a huge business model
huge.
There. It's the same as if you're saying to people, you know, these pills will magically make you a Romeo. Well, the same thing is saying, you know, the Earth's going to you know, the apocalypse is coming in a week. Do you have your apocalyptic gear ready? Here, buy your apocalyptic shirt. And you're, I mean, it's, you're dealing with the same kind of level of intelligence. So if you can scam them on all sorts of consumer items, you can scam them on religious items too, because they're willing to believe that crap.
Right. And I will also say, look, I mean, it's also not even, I mean, put aside even the scam notion, right? I mean, there are, for you know, for every one of these shows, like I have, let's say, there are literally dozens on the right, and they're much better funded by places like Heritage Foundation, by places like you know, the Americans for Prosperity. There's so much money. I mean, I've said this many times, and we've talked about this. There's just it has become a cottage industry. And,
right.
You know, we were saying this for years and years. And I think, like, there's a greater awareness now from the media establishment that, like, wow, this – all that money that's chugging around, floating around and creating – I mean, for instance, let's take Eric Erickson, okay? And we can – we I don't want to sort of leave this topic
abroad. But I was going to connect this to that, too. And I know we're going to talk about Planned Parenthood. That's a perfect example.
Eric Erickson.
Exactly what we're talking about right
in
now.
In a world where – there was not so much money floating around, Eric Erickson would not exist, right? I mean, he started a blog. I think it was Red State,
yeah.
Or one of the guys who started it back in the day. And they're on the left. Okay, you have Daily Kos, which has been around. I think Fire Dog Lake just shut down, if I'm not mistaken. On the
you've
left.
Got a much smaller version now of America Blog. Essentially, you've got like Crooks and Liars, and we're talking about the ones that are ideologically left, not ones where people, you know, where people are reporting stories, and as part of that, you know, there's a slant that's maybe somewhat to the left, but but they're not looking for just stories that promote a left point of view, right? Outside of the ones that are supported by magazines and newspapers. Independent ones, as you just said, Coasts, you know, Crooks and Liars, maybe a couple others that we're missing. That's it, as opposed to just this whole network on the right.
Well, I mean, look, you and I were certainly privy back in the day, 5 or 10 years ago, when all of these blogs were talking about how they're getting no support from the left, you know, the whatever, the Democratic establishment, the left-wing money machines, whatever it was, there was just – it was impossible to get money for these things. And,
yeah.
You know, advertising, like they would argue, like we can't even get unions to advertise. I mean, some unions ended up advertising a little bit, but compare that to what has happened on the right, Red State – is basically a subsidiary of Salem Communications now, which is this sort of ideological outfit.
Right. Well, I mean, let me give an example. I mean, look, you're an example of this in some ways. I'm a perfect example of this. I mean, I love doing what I do. I love doing PR, right? And particularly on progressive causes. And, you know, I will fully admit, I do some PR sometimes for things that are corporate, as long as they do not offend my values. And I will say I'll do stuff or corporate stuff that either leans left or is neutral. I'm happy to do because I need to make a living and be able to do what I need to do. You know, there was a point 7-8 years ago when I first founded this firm in 2009, there was a point where it was either this PR firm was going to make it or I was leaving lefty politics because nobody was funding me to write. When I wrote stuff for the Washington Monthly and they paid 10 cents a word, no one was funding me to do that. No one was funding me when I went on MSNBC and fought it out with conservatives. No money to do that. You know, and so the point is that these guys have a whole gravy system, which is ironic and hysterical when you think about it, that they're the ones always talking about welfare and complaining, when meanwhile they're paid way beyond market value to do what they're doing because there are people that financially benefit from that or just Christian ideologues who want that. But we have almost nothing like that on our side. You either discover a model that works in the market that allows you to continue to do this work, which you discovered and I discovered and, you know, Daily Kos and Crooks and Liars and some other people discovered, or you're gone. I mean, it's just that simple. There's nothing, there's no net below you. And if I hadn't been able to figure this out and do this, I'd be doing something else today. Right. I have a family to raise.
Indeed.
And a lot of people like me who didn't figure something out or maybe just got more unlucky. I might have gotten lucky with my timing. I'm sure some of that worked too, are no longer doing this. I have friends, plenty of them, who are no longer doing this because they couldn't afford to keep doing it.
That's right. And so, you know, but so you have a guy like Eric Erickson. He's still there because of that money basically coming in from high above. And now he is basically saying, he wrote today, just coincidentally, and that's probably why I'm using him as an example. And so now the guy, you know, the guy, his career is built now. And yes, if you get on the Red State mailing list, you will get the freeze-dried food and all the other stuff. But
he's got four different sources of income. He's got that. He's got
sure. I mean, it's a whole enterprise.
He's a Fox contributor, I believe. He gets paid for that. He's got a radio show. He's paid for that. A lot of this stuff is way beyond any reasonable market value that he provides. But he provides value.
Well, he's providing value to somebody. I mean, they're funding him, and on the right, they do it properly.
But it's the value he provides to people that don't want their taxes to go up. Or
right. Okay.
To be prayer and school.
Fair enough. I'm not even begrudging that, other than to point out this dynamic where
I'm not begrudging it either. I'm just pointing out a dynamic where people are funded above what market value says you should be paid to have a radio show or to write articles. On top of that,
subsidized.
They're given all sorts of grants and sinecures at right-wing foundations and things like that to keep them going, because there are people up top who benefit from that.
Right.
Nothing like that exists on the left.
That's
nothing.
Right. That's right. And so you've got this guy Erickson now, who is now saying, and this is where, you know, this explains Trump in many respects, and it explains just so much about what's going on the right. And so now you've got this Planned Parenthood assault by what is the name of the? It's hold on for one second.
Whatever this sort of medical progress.
It does double duty here when I tell you this. It is he quotes the media bureau chief at Life Center whatever that came out with this stuff. And the irony is that you've got Erickson now saying, okay, Republicans, if you don't shut down the government over Planned Parenthood funding, you're going to see the base just walk away from you. Now that probably won't happen, but in his title of his piece is "Do or Do Not." There is no try. Now, isn't that from?
It's from Star Wars.
Okay,
yes.
it's from Star Wars.
He really quoted Yoda.
It's a Yoda
from what
quote.
He said?
Yeah,
yeah, that's a Yoda quote. And
even
so,
though he looks a little bit more like Jabba.
Classic Schechter.
I heard Binder laughing. That's all I
classic
care about.
Classic Schechter.
Binder laughed.
Classic Schechter.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's LifeSite News Bureau Chief. I've conflated two things. LifeSite News Bureau Chief Ben Johnson has. Yes. LifeSite News.
Isn't Ben Johnson the guy that took the steroids and then, like, you know,
different guy? I hope.
And he broke records for Canada. And then
He is reporting that until the eve of his presidential campaign, Jeb Bush was a director of philanthropy that gave tens of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood. Jeb Bush is going to have problems on this too. But Eric Erickson,
let
me bring this home for a
second. But they used to be supportive of that, and now, I mean, that's the other use of this whole scandal. It's not just about hurting a funder on the left and a group on the left, which is what they always do. That with tort reform, going after unions, it's much more than ideology. It's about harming groups that actually. It's about defunding the left.
Right.
It's always a strategic.
All right. Well, let's get into that in a second. But I want to say
moderate Republicans they can hurt too. Who
yes.
Have been associated with this in the past.
Well, here's my point. So Eric Erickson,
people from moderate Republican families who become conservative Republicans by trading their values, but still aren't right wing enough. Let's put it that way.
So here is Eric Erickson, right? A guy who otherwise should be, in his basement, essentially, licking envelopes, selling freeze dried food. And not only is he not doing that, not only is he basically quoting Yoda in terms of what the Republicans should do in terms of defunding Planned Parenthood and shutting down the government if it doesn't happen, I guess in maybe levitating the U.S. Capitol. The days literally 2 days after the first set of debates on Thursday, all of the Republican candidates, not all of them, Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, Rick Perry, Chris Christie, Carly Fiorina, Bobby Jindal, Donald Trump, will be at a red state gathering for a panel that he will be moderating. So this guy is basically the one of the dons of the Republican Party.
The guy that you knew in high school was never going to make anything of himself. You were actually surprised he got through high school if you were there with him. And now he's a guy that's basically running the Republican Party.
Now, what do you think is going to happen at that gathering? Every single one of them is going to toe the line that, as Yoda says, there is do or do not. There is no try. And every single Republican who hopes to have any future in the Republican Party has to now toe the line for this guy. And,
right. And let's be clear about what the effects of that are.
Yes.
Right. I started off by listing a number of issues. But why is it that our infrastructure is falling apart and all this stuff and we can't raise taxes to do anything? Because it's this. Why is it that every other country looks at us right now with our gun laws when we've got 50 times the gun violence, for example, of Germany? And they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? Right. It's this. Why are other countries looking at us under education where our scores are dropping? We're taking money out of public schools, not investing money in it. We're putting kids in debt. We're not trying to put them through college. It is this. And the three issues I just mentioned, add every other issue. Add why there's a debate over this Iran agreement and everything else, because this is what happens on the right in the Republican Party, which puts pressure on all of these people. It's not to say there aren't any fissures or any people that stand up to it in any way, but for the most part, they'll never be president, and they better be pretty secure in their seat in their state, or they're going to be in trouble. And, you know, if I can say one more thing, Sam. I didn't want to cut off what you were saying, but I think
no.
– do you mind if I take a minute?
No, keep
because
going.
I think this brings this – the Planned Parenthood scandal, and, you know, disclosure as I disclosed before, I'm on the board of Planned Parenthood in both Southwest Ohio and Greater Ohio, so I'm on both of them. This actually – explains, if you want sort of an A to Z explainer of how this whole thing works, you know, the best way to do it is to look at this scandal. You've got this group with these lunatics in it with ties to Operation Rescue that has ties to the people who killed Dr. Tiller, among other crazy things they've done. You've got these people who are in ties to O'Keefe, right? And there's, what is her name, Lila Rose, who's been working, doing this stuff for a while, and this other guy whose last name I can't pronounce, nor do I want to, who's been doing these things. They're funded by right-wing groups, right? So at the very beginning of this, you find that there are people here who are being funded by wealthy right-wingers just to exist and do what it is they're doing. Then when they take something and they selectively edit it and take something and turn and completely take it out of context, lie about it, selectively edit it, and push it out there, the right-wing media runs with it constantly. Harps on it. It's on every half hour, if not more often, on Fox. It's on all the local and national media on the right. But the mainstream media doesn't lead every single report with "this is selectively edited" and "this is BS." Even if they have to report on it, if we had an objective media that called out lies, they would start every single broadcast by telling you that this is a lie. But they don't. So it's the right-wing media is able to use this mainstream media, right, in the manner in which almost as dupes to report what they want to report. So that's a second failure in our system right there, in addition to be added on to the first one, which is the people like this can be funded to commit this sort of dishonest activity. And then in the end, of course, the third part, which closes the whole thing down, which brings us full circle, is that then people like Eric Erickson can demand that the Republican Party do something to respond to all the media that's going around this, to the just complete explosion of media and the skewed perceptions people now have and the rest, and can say, you'd better do what we're telling you to do. I don't give a damn what Reince Priebus tells you to do. You better do what I tell you to do and Laura Ingraham tells you to do and the 50 mini Rush Limbaughs in all of these different cities and states, because if you don't, well, you know, we're going to come out, whoever it is who doesn't demand that this is done, whoever doesn't bring this up in the Senate and support it, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, Rand Paul, whoever doesn't do these things, you're screwed. We're going to all turn against you. And there, right there is how you start off with a made-up video and you get yourself to the point where a moderate yes, Planned Parenthood, 97% of what they do has nothing to do with abortion. And by the way, abortion rights are supported by a majority in this country, a place that helps low-income people get treatment for all manner of diseases, get educated, get prevention, and all sorts of other things is about to potentially be defunded, and the government may shut down over that. Local governments everywhere, including the one here in Ohio, are working on defunding, and they probably will. Where they've got control, and that's how you get from a complete crap premise to the end, where this organization is potentially destroyed, all because of what was written about in this Shorenstein centerpiece.
Right, and people should understand too. I mean, we've talked obviously about this. You know, if the mainstream media was doing its job, they'd say these are nothing is illegal here. There is no black market. I'm aware of.
Exists. We can speculate. Could there be a black market out there? There could be any number of black markets or any number of things out there beyond this. The point is that
to the extent that there's not a black market, it's because of this.
Crap.
It's because in 93, Mitch McConnell et al. Voted to make this legal because abortion is legal in this country. And you either use the tissue for research to save lives and improve people's lives, or it just goes into medical waste.
I donate my organs,
right.
Or I don't. That's exactly right. In some states, in Ohio, for example, we don't even allow it. So the conservatives have already banned this practice, even donating tissue. In a number of states. But all they had in that video is if Planned Parenthood was going to be the one responsible for transporting tissue to one of these biomedical centers, all she was talking about is that they'd be reimbursed for the costs of getting it there. That's it. They weren't going to profit off of it. That's illegal, very illegal, and nobody does that. I mean, could there be some rogue person out there doing that? As I said, absolutely. Where's your proof? They have none. So they're making stuff up, and it's worse than making stuff up. Right-wing media knows it's made up and runs with it. Left-wing media mainstream media, much of left-wing media in its own way, runs with this stuff, and we get to where we are now. That's where we are. And all this plays into each other. Everything we've talked about, which is why there's a sort of a theme throughout this entire
right,
conversation
and it cuts
today.
Both ways. I mean, the amazing thing is that this, like you say, this it's going to be fascinating to see what's going to happen to Jeb Bush. I mean, one of Jeb Bush's biggest problems is that. To the extent that this guy, he has taken positions that some would perceive as moderate in the past. Now, he's walked his way back on a lot of these, but the idea that
let's make sure that we don't play the game of letting the Republicans move the goalposts.
Right. No, I agree with you.
He's traditionally called conservative.
Right.
Is what
but he is suspicious. He is suspect on the right because he sat on a board that gave money to Planned Parenthood. Or board of a charity that gave money to Planned Parenthood. Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, fantastic. I would love to see Jeb Bush drop even further in the polls as Donald Trump rises. And next week when we talk, we're going to be talking right after the on Thursday night, right after the two debates. So we're going to be more focused on that, but.
At some point, it's going to be a problem for any Republican figures if they have future political ambitions to sit on any philanthropic boards.
Right,
because
but the upside is
what philanthropies do is they try to make the world a better place. You generally do that by helping people in need, protecting the environment, increasing making public health better. These are all things now that an ideologically captured party, as to get back to what the Shorenstein centerpiece said, can't do because that involves governing, and governing involves actually spending some money here and there and actually making investments which pay off off in the future, because when you invest in a railroad system, as this country did, there's economic growth. When you invest in a highway system, there's economic growth. Bridges allow people to get places so they can engage in economic activity. You know, I mean, these are all the, you know, when you invest in somebody's health care, they don't end up in the emergency room. When you invest, you know, in giving someone job skills or an education, they don't end up in prison. These are the end result of conservatism's I'd rather hate you more than do the right thing and spend any money means that actually that's what ends up costing us a lot more money in the long run, besides the morality of it. It's what ends up costing this country a hell of a lot more money. And, you know, that's what you're so they can't govern, because they can no longer propose even market-based solutions or short-term investments that would help the future. They're not allowed to do that because the Tea Party has this false notion that this was a libertarian country for 200-something years, you know, where the country, apparently we did nothing, and we didn't do any of these things. We didn't, you know, we didn't build a Hoover Dam, and, you know, the TVA wasn't built with any funds from the government, and, you know, none of these things actually really happened. We didn't send all of our GIs to college as a way of leading to economic growth. None of that crap happened. It's all just made up, apparently.
Or it's, you know, we don't even address it. I mean, in some ways, it's like it's the sort of the mirror image of some of these establishment media figures not even being aware of just how vast and deep that's why I think there was so much surprise and so much sort of blindsided. So many people were so blindsided by how durable Trump's sort of support, I guess, is in the Republican Party. I don't think there's going to be anything. I mean, this is what's fascinating about Trump, is that anything that that normal people would perceive as being detrimental to Trump's campaign actually enhances his stature.
That's right. Amongst Trump is what you call now. Trump is what you would call, if you're in the economic, in the technology industry or something else, he's a disruptor. He's essentially seen that all that's stopping people from doing certain things is that they have an ounce of shame, or that they believe that certain sort of, you know, traditions should be kept in place because they respect the country to a certain degree. If you don't give a damn what happens to the country and you have no shame, there's no reason why any showman at all. You know, you see the thing with James Woods yesterday suing somebody on Twitter for calling him a coke addict for $10 million. James Woods could run tomorrow. My guess is if he jumped in the Republican primaries, because he's an asshole and he has fame, he'd be in second place, maybe behind Trump. I mean, the point is that what Trump's showing is that anybody can do this who's willing to be enough of a jackass and has enough money and just cares about those kinds of things. And, you know, and that's showing how weak our political system is, because what we've allowed to happen to it. And everybody who says,
wait a second. Let me just.
I don't know that he is.
Let me amend
that. Money to keep it.
Cliff, let me. Are you there?
Didn't have that money.
Cliff, let me amend that, because, you know, let's not forget that in 2012, every single leading Republican contender went and kissed his ring. And so when you put this guy on a pedestal, this isn't some Joe off the street. This isn't, you know, literally whatever his name was, Joe the plumber, who had only his 15 minutes. The reason why Donald Trump is so durable and is so powerful in this Republican Party is because they have been worshiping at, if not Donald Trump specifically, the man, Donald Trump, everything that he represents.
Right.
For the past 20 years.
But that's the shamelessness part of it, that you're right. It's unique in some ways, but in other ways, it's because the shamelessness he carries with him into this race, he's always been that shameless, which has allowed him to make a lot of the money he's made on licensing and whatever, because he doesn't give a damn. Things that used to be considered, real estate people used to think that it was just below the lowest form of low class to put your name on things. He puts his name on everything. He doesn't care. He realizes he doesn't care what other people think, because even if it seems, you know, completely gaudy and disgusting, he gets name recognition out of it. What I'm saying is he's willing to go with where a lot of people won't go. He doesn't care. He's somewhat unique, but he's certainly not the only one. Find other famous right-wing actors with kooky. You think Vince Vaughn right now probably couldn't win a Senate seat if he ran the right state? I'm just saying. Find, you know, goofy right-wing figures who have some media skills and a shamelessness and the money, and they can do whatever the hell they want. And that's the thing. Bachman, Kane, all these people came crashing down when their 15 minutes were up. Santorum. The difference is that even though I'm sure this guy is vastly, as I read, overstating his fortune when he's saying $10 billion, all you need is a couple hundred million to keep yourself in it for a while. He certainly has that. And if he wins in Iowa and wins in New Hampshire and goes to socially conservative South Carolina and plays the populist route there and spends the money that he's willing to spend, he could win there too. And then I don't know what happens, frankly, because we've never, this is uncharted territory at this point. Do super PACs form just to take down Trump? Maybe. I mean, maybe the Chamber of Commerce goes after him because they're worried about it. I don't know what happened.
I'll tell you something.
Just say quickly and then go ahead. I think it's naive for people to think that he falls apart in the same easy way that the other people that did not have his money and his fame did.
Even, what was it, Krautheimer apparently went on Fox the other day and reversed himself. Saying, like, I'm starting to think that Trump might be around longer than I had originally anticipated. Now it's after Trump, you know, basically took a poop on him. And I happen to think that they're going to, that in the end, you know, your guy from Ohio, John Kasich, who it was reported in that second tier of candidates has raised more money than anybody else, apparently about $12 million through PACs. Yep. I think he is, you know, continues to be the one to watch because at one point, those who want, because nobody's on the Trump gravy train. Like there's no, because he's outside of the political system, he's unleashed. They have no leverage on him, but also short of the consultants he's paying, and they're going to hang around and they're going to tell him, you're in this to win it, buddy, because they're making some good bank. Apparently he's paying his people, you know, whatever, 15% more than your average consultant fee. At one point, the candidates are going to get together and they're all going to get chits by agreeing to some strategy. And I have a feeling there's going to be a coalescing. Maybe I think it's going to be Kasich because Scott Walker... There has been such a failure. He's the only one who's going up in the polls, aside from Trump.
What would have to happen is the Chamber of Commerce would have to get behind him. All the other forces, and it's just funny as hell, of course, to be calling the Chamber of Commerce a force of moderation, but that just tells you where this party is.
No, they're just on a different – there's no moderation here. They're just on a different team. They just want
I can't stand the Chamber of Commerce. They realize that you need someone who actually can govern or business doesn't work. You know what I mean? I mean, the thing about Kasich is you and I will disagree with huge numbers of his ideas, all right? But he has actually governed here. You know what I mean? I mean, and that's why he's gotten in trouble with the right, because he on Medicaid, he stood up to them. He stood up to them on a number of other things. He tried to raise taxes on the energy industry here, which pissed them off and pissed off some people, which is why the Club for Growth will probably go after him, like, big time. On abortion rights, on guns, you know, on charter schools, on clean energy, he's been terrible on any number of things. But he does actually believe in governing, you know. And in the end, these groups at the Chamber of Commerce realize that you need the rule of law to actually exist in a country for economics to work. I could see if they better all get behind, pick one person and get behind him, because in the end, if they don't, Trump or somebody as dumb as Trump will be their nominee.
Indeed. All right, Cliffy, I got to go. I'm going to talk a little more about this with David Bender, although we're going to mostly talk about his
new film. Say hi to David for me.
I will.
It's been a while.
We will talk to you next Thursday night at around 10:30, 10:45 p.m. Eastern.
It's going to be fun.
Right after the debate. All right. We will talk to you later. Thanks, Cliff.
Take care, man.
Bye. All right, folks, we can take a quick break. When we come back, David Bender will be joining us right back after this.
Driving on 9, you could be a shadow beneath the streetlight behind my home. Driving on 9, I sure miss you. Pass a motel, looking at the pines. Driving on 9, looking for 1:30. Maybe I passed it. Going. We'll
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome back to this program former co-host of Ring of Fire and Politically Direct, and now the political director for Progressive Voices, and a filmmaker, author and filmmaker of the film PlayingGay.com, a documentary. Well, I'll let him describe it to you, but he's been working on this for years. And I don't call him my old friend. I call him my friend of many years, David Bender.
Well, well done, Sam. That's you're aging like a fine wine, friend.
Yes. Well, we're both aging like fine wines, hopefully.
Well, fine winers, I think some people would say, but have had the pleasure and privilege. You and I go back to the beginning of something we like to call Air America, and I don't know what other people like to call it, but those were great days, and we continue to be in the fight. And it's funny because everyone does it in their own way. The way to communicate progressive values has changed enormously, even the 10 years since we started, 11 years since Air America started.
Dramatically.
Terrestrial radio is far less important, and what you're doing here with the Majority Report is not the future, it's the present. What I'm trying to do with this film that, as you say, has been inside of me gestating. I'm reminded of the movie Alien, that it's going to just literally burst at some point. But it's a story that I've been trying to tell a long time. Here's the story. It's the idea that in my lifetime we would see marriage equality seemed absolutely unthinkable to me 5 years ago. And you and I talked about this at the time, back in the Air America days, when Republicans used the very notion of marriage equality to put ballot initiatives on 11 states in 2004 to help reelect and successfully help reelect George W. Bush.
Yep.
Including in Ohio, the deciding state. So we'd come in a decade. We had made the kind of progress that seemed to political experts, cultural experts, unthinkable. But it was driven by television. Those same TV spots that demonized John Kerry for potentially opening the door to the destruction of marriage are the TV images we now see on Modern Family. We saw them on Glee. We see them on Orange Is the New Black. We see them on Transparent. We see LGBT people in a positive light, and this generation of young people has only grown up. It's called the post-Will and Grace generation. They've only grown up in the last 10, 15 years with the images that we didn't have when we were kids. And that's what this documentary, Playing Gay, and again, it's playinggay.com for people who want to know about it. I'm telling this story from the beginning, which started in the 70s and has made unbelievable progress. All of it, I think, because television made people comfortable with the idea that LGBT people were citizens, neighbors, friends, family, in a way that nothing else could do. That's the power of that medium.
You know, I saw that there's a clip that you have on, and it's the Playing Gay takes you to the Kickstarter page, folks, where you can like see a the video you did to in support of the film, and some of it appears to be some of the footage from the film as well. I think it's... Is it Wilson Cruz? He was the guy who auditioned for My So-Called Life? Is that?
That's right. Okay. Wilson Cruz, who is one of our executive producers as well, auditioned for a breakthrough part. He was the first, he was a teenager. He was 19 years old. And Wilson Cruz auditioned to play the first regular series primetime gay teenager. At 94, a few years, 3 years before Ellen came out. And it only ran, My So-Called Life is now a cult classic. It also had Claire Danes and Jared Leto. Right. But Wilson played this part and auditioned for it. And when he got the part, he had to come out to his family. Well, he had not yet come out of his family.
The amazing story for me, the one that really hit me, I mean, that's also sort of incredible on some level that you've got to come out because you're about to come out on television, is what he said to the producers. And he broke down. I mean, it's very, very moving. I mean, and I'm not spoiling anything. People go check it out because you watch it. It's very moving. But he said to the producers, like, even if I don't get this part, thank you, because if I had had this when I was younger, or I think he was even talking as a 19-year-old, to be able to see a portrayal of a kid who's just a kid going about his life, you know, teenager, but he's gay, and he's gay, I should say. I think it's hard for people, frankly, who are under the age of 30, 35, to understand, like, sort of how radical that was. I mean, the only gay character I remember as a kid that was called a gay character was Billy Crystal on that half-hour comedy called Soap. And it was
you can't know, Sam, how many people say the same thing. And I'm very, very lucky. I haven't interviewed him yet. This is a work in progress. And that's why we're doing this Kickstarter campaign, because we need to raise the funds to keep doing interviews. I've interviewed Norman Lear, who created the first gay character on All in the Family in one episode. Never happened before. But with Norman's help and a number of people who've been incredibly supportive of this project, we've reached out to Billy Crystal, who is so many people's first image in that show Soap in 1977, and I believe he's going to sit down with us as we go forward with Playing Gay and talk about the impact, because it really was unprecedented at that point.
And it wasn't necessarily...
Everybody has those memories.
It wasn't necessarily... I mean, if I was to watch that today, I suspect that would be... It would be sort of a really sort of hackneyed, low rent, not terribly, you know, it was full of, I think, just like limp-wristed jokes, if I remember correctly. I mean, this is a long time. I haven't seen Soap.
It wasn't quite that bad, but they did do a couple of things where, you know, it was a playoff of soap operas. That was the idea of Soap.
But just the idea to see somebody who was willing to identify as gay.
That's right.
Was, in and of itself, sort of shocking.
And they told people it would kill their career, and for a lot of people, it was true. You played a gay part, you couldn't get a straight acting job, even if you were straight, when you played a gay part in the 70s and 80s. That's just the way it worked. Agents said, oh, no, that person kissed someone of the same sex. No one will ever believe them as a romantic lead again. That was the conventional wisdom, and it held up for years. When Ellen hears a story that I've heard Ellen tell, and I am so hopeful that we'll be able to get her to tell this in Playing Gay, not interviewed her yet. She is, of course, singularly important. 42 million people watched her come out on ABC in 97. Her show was canceled the next year because ABC put a parental advisory warning on a situation comedy, mature audiences only. Not because she was having sex, far from it. She was still, she had been a straight loser who couldn't get a date, and then she became a gay loser who couldn't get a date, at least in the way they played the character. But she was still brilliant, funny. The show was actually probably even better in that last year. But ABC was so worried about sponsors and audience that they ruined their own show.
Right, and that was the Middle America Network, people should remember. Like, ABC is sort of like they're at that time, and still, I think, probably, their target audience, not the sort of, you know, NBC urbane crowd. Yeah, these are nuances on some level, but it is amazing, you know, because I think, like, you know, as a kid growing up in Worcester, I don't recall that I ever knew someone who was identified as gay. I mean, I obviously knew a lot of people who were gay.
That is a very important question. It's a question that is posed in polling data, and you know me, Sam. I read polling data like some people, read the sports pages. Right. I've followed this stuff my whole life, and one of the things that happened in the 70s was the first time they asked the question, "Do you know someone who is?" And in those days, they said homosexual, and the answer was in the 70s, I think late 70s, around the time of soap, one out of four Americans. 24% said, yeah, I know someone who's homosexual. You move forward 20 years to the time Ellen came out and Will and Grace came on the air, and those numbers were reversed. It was over 75% of Americans felt they knew someone who was gay or lesbian. But what that it's a false positive, as they say. It was the same thing that happened during the Cosby Show in the 80s. People felt they knew an African-American family. They were neighbors because they were on television. And it's weird but true. That's how that changed. It's not that more people came out or that that people had more gay friends in the 90s than they did in the 70s. It's that they started to see them and welcome them into their home, which is the equivalent of saying, I know somebody.
But wait, do you think it's that, or do you think that it was just like people started to understand that gay people were not some type of exotic, being that they, in high school, if somebody had asked me, like, I'm trying to, remember, like, what it was, if somebody had asked me, like, do you know any gay people? I'd just be like, no. Like, if somebody had asked me when I was in, 11th grade, in Worcester, like, have you ever seen a gay person? I think I would have said, like, yeah, I went down with my folks. We walked down Christopher Street one night in New York City, in the late 70s or the early 80s. And I would have said that was the only, it was just so far removed. Now, obviously, I was going to school with gay kids. I knew gays who were adults. I just didn't. I wasn't aware of it in any way or something.
Exactly. And you couldn't be. You know, Oscar Wilde back in the 19th century referred to it as the love that dare not speak its name. That was the idea. And invisibility. You remember during the AIDS activism in the 80s and well into the 90s, the slogan silence equals death.
Right.
For LGBT people growing up, we had no images of ourselves, Sam. We did not see until the 70s anything remotely positive. Here's what we saw in the 60s and what I remember. When it first started to be a possibility that you would see someone who was homosexual on television in the 60s, they were either, as you say, very limp-wristed stereotypes, very fey men or masculine women. But if they were written into an episode of the series, they were either homicidal murderers. I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. You can go back and look at it. We're going to treat this in Playing Gay, and you'll see in the movie when we're done, I'm going to show some of these images because they were horrific. They were either killers or the only other alternative in the 60s, if you were a homosexual, was you did the right thing by the end of the reel, you killed yourself because your life was obviously tragic. You had no future. And that's what you had to do in order to satisfy the audience. This poor, sad person, really, what choice did they have?
Right.
That's what I grew up with. And that is why the power of this medium, television, to change hearts and minds. And that's what we're doing with people's help. And I really have to say, this film only gets made if people help us out at playinggay.com, go to Kickstarter, give, $5, $10, whatever you can give. I'm telling you, this is a story that everyone has. What you just said is my favorite question. When do you remember your first image of a gay person on television. Straight or gay, people always remember something. And it's fascinating to see what the answers are. If you get a little older than you are, you hear people say Paul Lind on Hollywood Squares, who was never out, but with a nod and a wink in the center square, there he was. He was gay.
Right. And you know, and I want to make this point too, though, and this is not to, it would be interesting to know how it breaks down in terms of how much of what has happened over the years is a function of portrayals in television, and how much is a function of some incredibly brave activists and people. And I'm not quite convinced that they are they're mutually exclusive. Like, I would imagine on some level, the activism impacts the people who are writing the television scripts, and it inspires them in many ways to put it in there. I mean, because, I mean, the telling point, it seems to me, is to look at the way that marriage equality broke down in terms of age, that you can see the impact of television as a medium. And because there's no reason why activism would necessarily impact younger people more than older people, right? I mean, I guess, I don't know. It would be interesting to see that. But I mean, the whole project itself is fascinating to me. And I'm very excited to see the film. And I really hope that people get out and support your making of it, because, I mean, frankly, it's something that I'm surprised we haven't seen. it's about time.
I agree, Sam. I always thought the story would be told before I could get to tell it. But now, having interviewed so many of these key pioneers, like Norman Lear, Hal Holbrook, Martin Sheen, the ones who started early in the 70s, I'm so excited because we have the footage that is going to really begin this story and help us tell it all the way through these last 40, 45 years. And again, at playinggay.com, you can see some of these clips of this work in progress that we're encouraging people to help get made. The only other thing I want to say is about your point on activism. This does reflect the world as it changes, but it also affects. That's what television does. It's like a house of mirrors. We see ourselves, and then it bounces back and forth, and it picks up a certain momentum. As the culture is changing, then you see more of these images, but then that helps to create cultural change. The very instance you cited about Wilson Cruz, he was thrown out of his house by his parents when he came out, by his father, actually, and they didn't speak for a year. The producer of My So-Called Life learned this when he was filming the show and wrote an episode about the character getting thrown out of his house.
Right.
And right after that aired, Wilson's father called him and said, "Son, we need to talk." Now you can't make that up. That was truly how television had an impact. It literally, for this actor, this young man, this 19, 20-year-old, lost his relationship with his father and got it back because his father saw the pain he was going through. Imagine how many other families who had thrown their kids out of the house got to see that and said, "You know what? This is my kid. I love my kid." That's what television did and continues to do, and this is why it's so important to tell the story.
Yeah, that is such a – that story is so it's so crazy in some way. I mean, that he lost and regained his relationship from his dad because of that show in particular, but regained it as the person that he really was through a fictional portrayal. I mean, it's really – you're right. I mean, it's really like a hall of mirrors. So folks, it's playinggay.com. And how much longer is the Kickstarter up for, David?
We have 17 more days to go, and with your help, we're going to make it. I know it's going to happen. We've got a lot of people who are, you know how these campaigns go. That people sort of focus as we get to about a week or 10 days out. I'd like people to focus today, because we're going to make this film. This film is going to get made, but we really, I really want the buy-in of our community and our straight allies, because the more people who are involved, grassroots up, the stronger this story is going to be.
All right, folks, it's playinggay.com. We'll, of course, put a link at majority.fm. David Bender, thanks so much. Good luck with the film. I cannot wait to see this thing.
Sam, me too. Thank you so much, my friend. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. All right, we didn't have a chance to get into Trump, but that's the film is just, in some respects, just more compelling to me at the moment. That story about that kid is just unbelievable. All right, we're going to take a quick break, go into the fun half of the program, or should we just do a freebie? We'll do a freebie Friday today. Michael's like, Oh, wait a second. And you know what we'll do? Are we going to do the Ask Noah today?
It is my last casual Friday.
Definitely got to do an Ask Noah. It's his last casual Friday.
Oh, it is? This is your last casual Friday? Oh, we're not streaming. All right, we're going to have to do it. We'll have to do it next week because we don't have YouTube. We can't.
We can take questions just from the app.
Yeah, but let's do it. Let's do it where we can have it on video. All right, we'll do it. We don't need to do it today. We could do it Monday. Monday is a great day for Ask Noah. All right, so Freebie Friday, folks. It's been a while since we've done this. God, we just give and give and give. That's all it is. Give and give and give. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. Do we have that... that Rick Perry audio? We'll get to that. I just found that too hilarious and would be a fun way to... I got to say, folks, I am really, really excited for the debates. I'm almost... like I'm surprising myself on how excited I am by them, but... you know, when I start to see, like, you know, when you see this, that's why, you know, I wanted to talk to Cliff about this. And maybe we'll have Jackie Combs on. I mean, I have to go through more of her piece. But because a lot of it is sort of is really sort of Don Lights on Marblehead type of thing for me. But to see this is, you know, what I've been saying is that the Trump ascendancy is going to force the establishment media to address what it is they've been missing. Like, you know, you can't ask the question, you can't answer the question, why is Trump doing so well, with not beginning to realize that something fundamentally is different from the Republican Party than it was 15 years ago. It's not that the party is full of people like this. It's that the party is now dominated by people like this.
Did you see Donald Trump's tweet yesterday about the debates?
I'm going to win, and...
no, it's great. It's so good. I look forward to the debate on Thursday night, and it is certainly my intention to be very nice...
yes, I did see that.
...and highly respectful of the other candidates.
That's right. I also, you know, I pulled a story a Politico story that said party leaders are telling Jeb Bush... to not get into it with Donald Trump, which leads me to believe that Jeb Bush is, and supposedly Jeb Bush is now sequestered himself, prepping for this debate. Trump is probably like, what do I need to prep for? And it's probably not prepping. I mean, this is going to be so fascinating because the new polling that has come out, you know, and look, in past years, I would say that polling at this time, far less relevant. But the reason why it's so relevant now is it is, one, you have 15, 16 people running for president. So there's no big gap. You know, everybody seems to be in it on some level, statistically speaking, at least in terms of the polling. But Trump is such a toxic figure for the Republicans. They have no leverage over this guy. Like I say, he's like kryptonite to them. There's nothing, you know, he is not just from their planet. He is their planet. Yeah, I tweeted out the other day, like trying to attack Trump for these Republican candidates is like trying to attack Republicanism. He is their essence. And, you know, the idea of like his, the story about how he, you know, his lawyer came out and said, you can't rape your spouse. Now, the lawyer had to walk it back. But does anybody out there think that this fundamentally hurt Trump with his base? No, of course not. The question is, how much did it gain him?
I see Trump only hires the brightest. I'm looking forward to voting for him and seeing his cabinet.
It's luxurious.
I mean, when Trump comes out and says, I'm going to put Sarah Palin in my cabinet, does anybody think that hurts him? What are they going to accuse him of? What are they going to say? Like, you're bad at business? You're underhanded? You're sneaky?
But he just hired one of her aides as his national political director.
Sure, of course. Of course. All right, so here's a perfect example, right? And here's, so Rick Perry, where is Rick Perry here?
He's at the Yale Club. It's on your list. He's at the Yale Club giving a speech. I think he was giving a speech on Wall Street reform, and he got a question about Trump.
He got a question
funny
about
in
Trump.
And of itself.
So here's Rick Perry. He's at a speech at the Yale Club. And now, why is he going to the Yale Club? Look at his face. Why is he wearing the glasses? Rick Perry is still on the I've got to prove I'm not an idiot tour. And he gets a question. Essentially is Donald Trump has called you an idiot. How will Rick Perry respond? Play this.
Question from the audience. Yes, sir.
Hey, Governor Perry, David Martosko with the Daily Mail. I spoke to your party's frontrunner this morning, and Mr. Trump had a couple of interesting things to say about you, and I'd like to get your response to them. He said you don't belong on the debate stage on August 6th. He questioned your energy, toughness, and quote-unquote brain power that it might require to run a successful campaign. What would you say to Mr. Trump if he were standing here saying that in your presence?
Let's get a pull-up bar out there and see who can do the most pull-ups.
Okay. So
I see
now,
Trump was right to question his brain power.
Yeah. So you should see the smile on Rick Perry's face. And there's Rick Perry. There's Rick Perry responding, I'll just take the energy and toughness part of your question. I'm going to address that one. I'm not going to address the part about the brain power. I'll just let that sit because I came up with a pretty good quip about the pull-up bar. There's some clicking. Do you hear that? I think you bring down the sound on your computer or something. All right, let's go to the phones. Calling from a 763 area code.
Hi.
Who's this?
Shank Steele here.
Hey, Shank Steele. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Boy, this is crazy. I got a shitty line, and I'm not even a libertarian. Hey, Matt Bender.
Yeah, what's up?
This is for you. Congratulations. That's really why I called, is to congratulate you on fatherhood.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're going to do you're going to do great. And I don't have anything else other than I'm looking forward to the debates as well. I think it's going to be like a pack of hyenas with Tourette syndrome out there. So that's all I got.
All right. Appreciate the call.
You guys have a great weekend.
You too. Uh-huh. Let's go to 416 area code. Who's this?
Hello, is this Sam?
Yes. Who's this?
Hi, Sam. I'm Steve. I'm from Toronto. I called the show once in the fall, and I gave a couple of movie recommendations. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm okay, thanks. And I'm also a pretty big fan of the show as well. I had an idea. I was wondering if I could make a music, two music recommendations.
Sure.
Is that kosher? Okay. So the first one you might know is Juliana Hatfield. She had a few hits back in the 90s.
Yes.
And she has stuck around. Her stuff has gotten better and better and better and better. She did a really good tune called The Fact Remains, where she ties Hurricane Katrina in with, like, personal stuff about hanging around too long and lying and stuff like that. She's really, really good, and her voice is still really sweet and really nice. So that would be the first one.
All right, check out Juliana Hatfield, okay?
Yeah, the album How to Walk Away is the one that tune is from, and everything on that is really good. The second one, there's this duo called the Milk Carton Kids. Has Matt heard of them? Has anyone heard of them?
The Milk Carton Kids?
Okay, yeah, the Milk Carton Kids, they're a duo, and they sing close harmony, like a Simon and Garfunkel style, Everly Brothers style, and they're really good guitar players, like they're excellent. So when I hear them, I go, oh God, finally, someone has, from that kind of generation or sub-generation, has raised the bar. Like, they're very sweet and very good and really literate. And
Noah's heard them, apparently. He's raising his hand back there. I will check both those out.
Yeah. And congratulations to Matt as well. I really like the Matt and Micah as co-hosts. I like hearing them laughing in the background. It makes the show really cool.
Well, they're not even here half the time doing that. We just have a loop on them. I just use my – appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Where is that clicking coming?
Yeah, I hear it now. It sounds like cell phone interference.
Well, put down all the other do one at a time.
All right. No.
Not that one. Not that one. Not that one. That one. What was that?
It's Michael's mic.
All right. Put Michael's mic down. Sorry, buddy.
Oh, well, don't hurt you. Do that.
I'll do it right now.
Let's go to 559 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Sam. It's Luis from California.
Hi, Luis. How are you?
Hi, good. I called yesterday, and I think I might have sounded a little bit pessimist about how late Bernie Sanders is starting. But the reason I was sounding that way is because, you know, earlier you said something like, it's only, we're like over a year away from the campaign, but I mean, really for Bernie, he's competing against Hillary, not so much a Republican Party. I think you and I and a lot of people would agree that if he beats Hillary, I think he's pretty much got it locked. So, his campaign is not next November. I mean, his election is not next November. His the date he has to worry about is the upcoming primaries, which start in January, and then Super Tuesday is March. So I do think he's very limited on time, but, you know, hopefully things could work out well. But I wanted to share with you something that I was watching yesterday, because I think, I think MSNBC is, I don't know if they're being told not to cover Bernie and his issues. I mean, Rachel Maddow is doing a pretty good job at covering, you know, the big attendances for his rallies. But yesterday I was watching Chris Matthews, Hardball, which I know you don't, and I watched it once in a while, but I was glad I did yesterday because Debbie Wasserman Schultz was on the show.
Right.
And, man, Chris Matthews, just the whole time, he was almost like laughing at Bernie Sanders. Like, he wouldn't even call him a Democratic socialist. He would just say, he's a socialist with a big smile on his face. And he asked Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and I was hoping he would ask her about the debate. When are the debates going to be? No question about that. But he did ask her, do you think this is good for the Democratic Party? Do you think it's good that he's pushing her so far to the left? Not even saying, do you think he has a chance of winning? He's pretty much dismissing that idea. And he asked her,
apparently we have that sound. Let me let you go. Let's listen to the sound, and I'll talk about it. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
All right. Let's listen to that sound. This is an exchange between Chris Matthews and Debbie Wasserman Schultz on Bernie Sanders. Good.
Democratic convention, win or lose. You want to have him up there on the stage as a socialist representing the Democratic Party? Do you want him up there?
Bernie Sanders.
You want him on the floor of the
convention?
Bernie
Sanders has been a good Democrat. Caucuses with the Democrats. Of course he should speak.
Speak in prime time.
He should speak at the Democratic National Convention.
In prime
convention.
Time, with everybody watching.
Bernie Sanders represents we are a big
party. So the answer is yes.
I said yes, but
in prime time.
I don't know what time he should speak.
Oh, maybe
certainly.
When nobody's watching, you mean?
No, of course Bernie Sanders should speak. He should speak in a slot where the appeal that he has across the board, the progressive, populist message that he has that resonates deeply and widely with the American people, not just with Democrats, absolutely that should be featured. The difference between us and the Republicans is that we really are a big tent party.
Well, what is the difference between a Democrat and a socialist? I used to think there was a big difference. What do you think it is?
The difference between...
Is a Democrat like Hillary Clinton and a socialist like Bernie Sanders?
What's the difference between being a Democrat and being a Republican?
Well, what's the big difference between a Democrat and a socialist? You're the chairman of the Democratic Party. Tell me the difference between you and a socialist.
The relevant debate that we'll be having over the course of this campaign is what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
I think there's a huge difference.
The difference between a Democrat and Republican is that Democrats fight to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to succeed.
Well,
and the Republicans are strangled by their right-wing extremists. And so we're watching them debate phasing out Medicare. And a candidate who actually said that President Obama would march Israelis to the ovens. I mean, that's the kind of debate that's going on their side. And on our side, we're talking about the best way that we can help make sure that every American has an opportunity to reach the middle class.
All right. Well, this is just bizarre to me. I mean, first off, I think it's perfectly reasonable. I'm not a huge Debbie Wasserman Schultz fan, frankly. But I think it's perfectly reasonable that she wouldn't say when he's going to speak at the convention if it's a situation where, from her perspective, like, we get into a negotiation with Bernie Sanders about his delegates, or Hillary Clinton gets into a negotiation about his delegates. You don't want to start at, I've already got a primetime speech, I want two, or whatever it is. It's just ridiculous. Secondly, there's a very easy answer to what's the difference between the Democratic Party and a socialist. And that is, socialism, there is no socialist party that is a major political party in this country. Democrats are a big tent. This is what I would say if I'm Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We have people who are far more interested in the market working in areas, let's say, like healthcare, or Bernie Sanders, who believes that Medicare, which has been a very successful program for our seniors, should be expanded to everybody. I'm curious as to what Chris Matthews thinks a socialist is. I mean, I think, Bernie Sanders calls him a socialist. Calls himself a socialist. I think there are some socialists who would have an issue with that, take an issue to it, frankly. But he's, we're all socialists, at least, from the center to the left, and to some degree or another. If you're supportive of Social Security, you're supporting some measure of socialism.
Well, I mean, even the Tea Party people out there are going, hands off my Medicare. And,
exactly.
They
just don't label
surprise them and tell them that they believe in socialism, and they'll
silly
blow
exchange.
Their minds.
Silly exchange. I'd be curious as to see, I'm Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I would say, well, Chris, I'm very interested in hearing what you think the difference is. But, of course, he's not going to answer that. Jez Garzley, what happened to Matthew the film guy? Is he cut from the rotation? He usually follows Isabel and has been. No, he was before Isabel, right? Didn't we have him on that Friday before vacation?
Just tell him the truth, Sam. Matthew the film guy will no longer be on this program. He is barred.
That's
he is not,
not
welcome.
That's not true.
You hear that?
Wise line, Port. Maybe it was Cokehead and Mr. Woods misunderstood, as in the Koch brothers. AJ Chicago. Very pleased with my Sanders meetup in Chicago. There was a great mix of newly politicized people, low information, Obama-loving liberals and progressives with histories of radical activism. Good conversations. Even if Bernie doesn't win the nomination, his campaign has already proven itself to be very constructive. It's bringing together a genuine American left. I mean, that, I you know, like I've said, I think at the very least, Bernie Sanders' agenda is to bring about some type of, to begin to create some type of movement to which he and other progressive members of the Senate have a direct line. Umar Shami, I recently met a guy who was showing off his 122,000 2013 BMW M5. What the frick? Seriously? Do you really have a, is there a BMW that really costs $122,000? He said he didn't care about the law because he didn't want to ruin the front of his, I asked him about not having a front license plate. He said he didn't care about the law because he didn't want to ruin the front of his car. The only time he'd been pulled over by a cop is when he wanted to get a closer look at his M5. Oh, by the way, the guy was not black. Two recommendations for your future gaming backlog, the upcoming Tacoma first-person exploration game. You are a new hire of the crew of Space Station, only to discover the other six crew members are missing. You have to piece together the clues. You know what, Umar? You got to send me a I'm not going to read all of it. Send me an email with that stuff. I got to make a list for the day that Saul turns six when I can, like, start watching, using all this stuff again. Lawnchair Media, did you see the NYT piece on the Coke trying to clean up their image? Look, I'm fine with them supporting prison reform, but it's a joke. They call themselves libertarian or classic liberals. They love oil subsidies and freedom as long as they can own everything and make decisions. You know what? I'm not convinced that's not sort of classic libertarianism. I mean, look, it's completely arbitrary. What was it that Professor Bloch said about how we determine property rights? It's based on the French vision of agriculture, not the ones of the people who were here before us.
Yeah, and what's wrong with that? You cheeky bastard. Let me ask you a question. Are you a Jew? Have I seen you at a Seder Passover dinner? Now, let me ask you this. Say an old lady trips on the street. She falls and breaks her ankle. Are you with me so far, Sam? We call this an addictus absurda rigmus in Latin. Now, that lady's broken her ankle. And you say, the old lady broke her ankle. Too bad. But what if she had broken a hip? Which is worse? And if a Native American broke either, right. Who cares?
Let's go to the phones. You're calling
Tough
from
wigwam.
A calling from a 917
Chief coconut shell.
Calling from a 917 area code. Who's this?
Hey Stan, this is Jake the teacher.
Jake, how's it going?
From New York City.
What's up?
Calling in this summer because I never get to hear you during the school year. A quick question. I was wondering if you saw that Bernie Sanders is going to be debating Rand Paul.
I haven't seen that anywhere.
Yeah, well, he's been calling for open debates that are open to all parties in the primaries because. You know, isn't it silly that the Democrats debate the Democrats and then
Right. Everybody
has to shuffle the etch-a-sketch, right? So he put that out there. They mentioned it on Rachel Maddow one night, and now it looks like he finally got someone to take him up on the offer.
Wow, that's great.
I'll debate you, Jew. Anytime you name the place.
Sure, this will be huge. Let's do it, Bert. Let's do it, Rand.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll keep an eye out for it. But I appreciate the phone call, Jake. We'll look for it.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Have you heard about this gay moonbeam program from the UN? I guess I can't really talk about that stuff in public anymore while I'm running for president. It's such a drag.
Casey Humanist.
Running for president sucks.
Guest suggestion, Jen Sanko, filmmaker of The Brainwashing of My Dad. It was just screened at the Traverse City Film Festival. I've heard of that. Communist dog, Sam, look out for Michael judging from his red ass. I think his net worth has almost hit Republicans. He's probably started a right-wing podcast. Look out for Michelle.
Who is that?
I don't know. Yorick, will you put Michael's thing down while he's talking? That beeping we got to fix. I would check the cables. Yorick, I've said for years that I wish I were a sociopath so I could make the cash the winged up media makes. My conscience keeps me poor. The answer is that socialism is an economic idea, whereas the Democratic Party is a political party. Indeed. Nick, Sam, another great show. Even if I go back to the old Air America days, I'd be hard-pressed to find a better one. A Square, Sam, amazing that the reporter was so unaware of the right-wing world beyond Limbaugh, some right-wing establishment mag. Therein lies part of the problem. Did you call it out as propaganda? I'm still cracking up at the vision of the Trump statue and the rest of the clown cars climbing it. On another note, check out the labor stand in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin article, New York Times Magazine a few weeks ago, the guy interviewed Bryce would make a good guest. Bryce, B-R-Y-C-E. And yes, Sam, Billy Crystal on Soap was a breakthrough and not played campy. The entire show was light years ahead. Discrete transistor. Bill O'Reilly's claiming that the Black Lives Matter movement is funded by George Soros. Well, I'm going to assume that's not true, being the only time I've ever heard Soros' name mentioned is by morons on the right. Does he actually fund anything on the left? I mean, yes, he funds some things on the left. But not nearly what he's attributed to, as far as I can tell.
George Soros really hates white people. George Soros hates white people, though. That's clear.
Did he do anything to earn the reputation the right has given him? Every time I mention the Koch brothers or the right-wing billionaires' influence on politics, starts yelling about George Soros. No, it's not even remotely close.
They just needed a Koch for the left, and they just looked at, so let me find the richest guy who we could see donating.
Well, yeah,
to
no,
the...
I mean, look, George Soros has supported stuff on the left. There's no doubt about it. The idea that George Soros has given anywhere even remotely close to what the Koch brothers, even this year in aggregate, the Koch brothers have announced that they're giving $1 billion, or this cycle, I should say, $1 billion.
There's also a fundamental difference between a guy like George Soros, who values a certain type of politics and cultural policies and all sorts. I mean, he's funded a lot of interesting things. Versus with the Koch brothers, where it literally just might as well be another business investment.
Well, no, I don't think that's true.
I
don't think that's true.
I do.
I mean, look, David Koch bought his way onto the Libertarian Party ticket 25 years ago, and I think they're true believers.
I'm not questioning their ideological commitment. I'm just saying it's completely synchronized with their self-interest, whereas with Soros, it isn't.
Of course, but that is almost definitionally libertarianism at this point. That's why it's always white males who tend to be the biggest proponents of it.
Was that a good answer, Mr. Soros? Did we make you proud?
Carl Sagan, too. I spent all day yesterday arguing with right-wingers about Planned Parenthood on Facebook. The most popular assertion was that Obamacare makes Planned Parenthood unnecessary because all low-income women now have health care. They can't seem to distinguish between health insurance and health care providers. Yeah, indeed. Many of the people who get their health care as paid for by Medicaid get it from a Planned Parenthood clinic. Thank you. Mailmen. Two words, Sam. Saul Alinsky on your son's namesake. Now that I got that out of my system, I believe for the last decade, right-wing talk has essentially set the political narrative. Can it truly be possible that there are people on the left that did not see this? No, what's even more shocking is there are national reporters covering national politics who didn't understand this. Zero Anaphora. Waste not, want not didn't go over well when argued with anti-choice relatives on Facebook. The Billy Crystal character was initially presented as transsexual. There's a lot of trans-gay confusion going on. Huh, I don't recall that. Liberal Atlanta, at Red State, they ban any dissenting views. Erickson claimed Wisconsin teachers made $100,000 a year in the past. Trump puts his name on building is low class, just as we now have the naming rights to staming. Same thing. Trump Towers equals MetLife Stadium. Interesting. Juniper J, apparently Fox is arranging the debaters by their poll ranking. Trump is going to be center stage. That's fantastic. Perhaps he'll get a larger, more luxurious podium, too. What cabinet position would he give Palin? Secretary of State Palin? Treasury? Defense? I'm kind of scared. I have a feeling he'll back off that one once he's president, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Bernie Sanders will speak at the convention primetime. The nominee always does. Pat McGroin, Indiana defunded for Planned Parenthood in 2011. The HIV outbreak that followed was mentioned by HuffPo and Daily Kos. Nor the media seems to make the connection. It's frustrating. Worse are the despicable Christians who see it worth it. Arg. Michigan Man, you guys should let Noah co-host on Matt and Mike Day. Tam Folger, scarily honest talk from Cliff about defunding Planned Parenthood. I've heard that during Soap's first season, the ABC brass sent Billy Crystal on a media tour to talk about his heterosexuality. MSNBC should have canceled Chris Matthews' show. He's annoying and a terrible host. Lawyer Matthew, wow, so different from me growing up in the village than you in Worcester. I remember my parents interior decorating, being the first person I knew who was gay, probably in fourth or fifth grade, and it wasn't a big deal. The DX Fool. Hey, Sam, do you know why you cut out between 1215 and 1250? No, I don't know why. I wasn't even aware of that. The Librarian, guest suggestion, Jonathan Crary. Late Capitals in the End of Sleep. We've been trying to get that guy. You got to turn up his...
Stunningly hard to book that guy.
Have we ever reached him?
Confusingly hard to book. We did. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say everything on air, but it's been odd trying to get him.
All right. We'll keep working on it. We've been trying for months. Tom Brady. Regis Philbin is a hack. Roe in 1980. Sam, I believe the phrase is light dawns on Marblehead. What was I saying?
That is what you said.
I can't remember. Dawn breaks on Marblehead, I think it was. But you may be right, Rowan. Doe Link. Thinking about the juxtaposition of the GOP clown bus and the debate in Jon Stewart's last show next Thursday. I know. Saw an article of how someone in government contacted MSNBC to let Schultz go because of his constant coverage of TPP. I would be surprised if there wasn't somebody from the administration who didn't complain about it. They complain about things like that all the time. I would also be surprised if ultimately that was why he was let go. Look, the ratings for MSNBC across the board have been pretty piss poor. And it's clear that the way they've decided to go is to make Dateside go back to no opinion, just news. And I think Schultz ended up being part of that. All right, look, you got to, when Michael speaks, keep his mic up. When it's down, I understand. But just when he stopped talking, put it down. Jay Tingle. Disappointed that your guest David Bender gives such short shrift to Charles Nelson Reilly. Hard to take him seriously now. Juliana Hatfield is a big phony. A lot of emo Gen Xers got roped into that scam. Just get Katy Perry or Taylor Swift and embrace the artifice. La Poupée qui fait non is an epic ballad. Watch the YouTube of Michael Polnareff singing in front of 100,000 Parisians a couple of years ago. Then listening to a recording of Juliana Hatfield singing the theme to Josie and the Pussycats. You really don't want to get me started on Juliana Hatfield. I guess we have. That show Soap was a typical case of a network trying to mainstream a successful left-field show. In this instance, the excellent parody, Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. Soap was mediocre, but at least we got Billy Crystal. Hilarious Billy Crystal. I have a feeling that's also sarcastic. Majority Report listener. With Obama saying slavery is okay for the top, why not force his hand with Brunei and see if okay Sharia is on the list? Ted Cruz is seeming more and more like Urkel when I hear his voice. All these people who hate socialism don't say the same thing with our socialist policies like Social Security and Medicare. Strudel, hey, Sam, just want to know how excited we are about Thursday. Feels like getting a tour of Hogwarts by Harry Potter. Noah's folks. I'm not sure I follow that, but... Okay. MR Fan. Can't wait for the debates. I think George H.W. Bush was the first victim of right-wing media. I, too, want to support that documentary. And Mr. Bender is right on the money. My hope is that other societies can warm up to gay portrayals. I think Revolutionary Girl Utena and Sailor Moon, Haruka and Mirshu would be proud. May gay rights be achieved in our lifetime. Bernie 2016. And Bonora. Utter red-baiting by Chris Matthews in that clip. Yeah, it's very strange. Lone Star Liberal. Hey, Sam, if there's a minimum security penitentiary debate between Christie, Perry, and Walker, can right-wing Mandela moderate if his campaign fails to get off the ground?
They would never survive. They would never survive in Robben Island. They are not real men.
And I challenge Rick Perry to a pull-up contest.
I was going
to
say.
A triathlon contest and anything else he so desires. The glasses don't fool me. My record in South Africa was fabulous. It was excellent. Nothing was better. Donald Trump is a fraud.
Benjamin, after this election, I think we may see an actual schism in the GOP. Social conservatives in the establishment business friendly wing will claim stewardship of the Republican Party. I mean, it depends on who the nominee is. If the nominee ends up being someone other than Walker or Bush or even Kasich, I mean, it would be hard for the right, it seems to me, to say that Walker was not of them or that Kasich, I don't know. But if it's Bush, it'll just get worse for them. Lombardo.
James Woods will endorse me.
Lombardo, let me get through these IMs. I'd be interested in playing gay. Also delved into Dog Day Afternoon. Freda from The Godfather playing Al Pacino's wife. Can't remember if it was transgender or not. That's right. Bob Flay, Wasserman Schultz is a Hillary bought and paid for. As Mike Malloy has said many times, I'd rather go all Republican than have a fake like Hillary takes us further to fascism. Well, it worked out great with George W. Bush. Bernie or nothing. I mean, Film Fest guy. You know, we've been down that road once before. Matthew, film guy leaving the show is spot open. Sorry, guys. Got my hopes up. Censor sweep. I stream Chris Hayes most nights on my unreliable computer, so in order not to miss the first 5 minutes of Hayes, I usually have to start streaming during the last minutes of Hardball, and holy hell, Chris Matthews, let me finish segment. Honestly feels like what you'd expect him to say in a cameo of some terribly generic movie, where some supporting character turns to the TV right before breaking news, crucial to the plot. Mighty Max. Previous to that exchange you played, Chris Matthews asked her a question that prompted her to say, I think it's healthy to have primary debates throughout our campaign. I don't think we're going to have a terribly long one, probably different than we did in 08. Needless to say, she doesn't anticipate Bernie will compete with Hillary for too long. One thing I wanted to share during my call was an organizing idea that we're using for our local Bernie support group. Before Wednesday meeting, I started a Facebook group called Tulare County for Bernie Sanders. At the meeting, I asked everyone to join. Since that night, we've been getting a lot of requests to join the group from people throughout my county. We'll be using it to coordinate. I recommend your listeners do the same as a way of getting a local movement going. It's a good idea. Been there. What's your take on Steve Kornacki? He refers to Bernie as a socialist as well. Well, I mean, Bernie refers to himself as a socialist. Cecil Ardbonaire. Sam, I believe you once said you can't wait for Trump's popularity to force the media to examine what had changed within the Republican Party. Do you seriously think the media will do that? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how widespread it will be, but I mean, I think like this Jackie Combs thing is an example of it that we started the show with. I really do. I don't know how widespread, again, but I do. I think it will. The Pride of Crack Hour. I'm a bit weirded out that a dead lion got more grief than the Cincinnati cops shooting victim. Yeah, I agree with that. Tolstoy. Time to revisit Blinded by the Right by David Brock. Laid it out all a long time ago. NYC teacher. Yes, the videographer from the Planned Parenthood video has been linked to James O'Keefe, apparently a younger mentee. Poor James O'Keefe. I was able to get a crazy right-wing uncle, no joke, an actual crazy right-wing uncle of mine, to agree that Planned Parenthood should not be defunded by using a hypothetical replacing Planned Parenthood with the VA as the government organization. Basically, I said, if 3% of the VA's operation was to provide abortions, would you still want to defund the whole organization? Good point. Dennis Hastert, where am I? And the final IM of the week... Two words for dude who would rather go all Republican than have President Clinton. Supreme Court. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lies. Shifted in and out.